This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Hey, home theater nerds, welcome to the Brightside Home Theater Podcast, the podcast that's all about the sights, the sounds, the scenes, all the fun that you have in your theater. And this week, I'm bringing in my buddy Lee Overstreet from AV Rant, guest host over there. And we're going to talk, obviously, you see the title, 2001 A Space Odyssey in 4K. But we go off on a bunch of tangents. We have a lot of fun. It's just, this is what this podcast is about to me. It's like, when it's just me and we break down the scenes, that's fun too. I love having discussions with people, and who knows where these discussions are going to go. That's the point, right? But before we get to that, I have one more push for my buddies over at Hashtag Dork. They're not even my buddies. They're just guys I like. So Hashtag Dork, wearing their t-shirt if you're looking on YouTube, Hashtag Dork. You can find them on YouTube at Hashtag Dork Podcast. Anybody and everybody listening to this, please do me a favor. They're trying to get over 1,000 viewers. I talked about it on Tuesday in my Tuesday's podcast, and we grabbed them over 10 listeners. The last I checked before I recorded, they were at 992. I think I grabbed them 11 listeners since then. Probably wasn't all just us, but let's get them over that 1,000. If you haven't already done so, go on YouTube, look for Hashtag Dork Podcast. They'll come up. Two great guys. I talked about it in my podcast on Tuesday. Rich Keefe, Ryan Davey, great guys. I don't want to rehash the entire story, but great guys. Check them out. I'd love to see them get over 1,000. All right. Enough on that. Let's get to my conversation with Lee. Let me put my headphones on and let's get Lee out of the green room, who's been sitting there oh so patiently. And we'll have a great conversation, and I'll be back with more after that. Hey, Lee, how are we doing?
Hey, DJ, we're doing good.
I know we are, because we've been talking for about a half hour.
For at least a good 20, 25 minutes.
And we're like, we should record this. So I had to say hello so we can make it seem. So anyway.
Hi.
Let's start at the beginning. You haven't been here since December.
That's
not
right.
For want of either of us. You've right. Had quite the year.
Yeah,
and
it has been a lot.
We've been back and forth since March. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was very happy to hear you back on AV Rant a couple weeks ago.
A long time with them. Yep. Yeah.
And that's where I got my biggest update on what's going on with you and everything.
Right.
And it has been a tough year, so I'm glad to see everything is going much better for you right now, correct?
It is better. It's getting there. It's never going to be... I'm learning to accept that there's just a lot's going to go on, and that's just how it is now, and get over it, right? So, yeah we've had... There's been good stuff, like a really cool new car, bought that Tesla. Wow,
yeah,
that's amazing.
That's really fun.
My poor dad was in the hospital for 4 months. That's not good, right?
So, yeah.
But he got out, man, and he got
That's
home.
That's great.
And bless his heart, we just went to a doctor's appointment with him yesterday, and there were spots on his lungs that are getting better.
Nice.
Actually going the right direction.
Yep.
But it was also bad yesterday because some things are going on. And So yesterday was rough. Good, then bad. See? Combination of stuff, right? That's just life. So I'm just kind of getting used to a new normal where there's just a lot of... Up, down things going on.
Yeah, we're actually going through that in my house with my wife's father, my father-in-law, and exactly the same thing. Like,
we're at the age where the parents are just got issues now. That's just how it is, right?
And yeah,
you just
exactly.
deal best you can.
Yeah, but my father-in-law is in the same situation as your dad in that there's parts of him that's getting better. And they were like, oh, this is actually healing and he's doing well and he's getting up and around. But there was a time when it was, very low, very, very low. And you went to see them and you're like, That's not the man I know.
We had at least 2 to 3 times when my dad was in the hospital where it's like, let's go say bye.
Yeah.
Frankly. And somehow this man is the toughest little dude in the world.
Yeah.
And he got down as close as you can get to being gone. And now he's trucking along back at home, doing his best, trying to get stronger, trying to do the stairs, that kind of thing.
Oh, good for him. Good for him.
People are amazing, man.
He's a fighter. Yeah. Sounds like he's a fighter.
He is. That's awesome. Really is.
Yeah. Stubborn.
In many ways. Yes. Yes. He's stubborn to die. Like, right. That's how amazingly stubborn this man is.
It's right. It's at this point in your life, everybody uses it as a compliment, but everything up until now has been like, oh my God.
Right.
What a pain in the ass.
It's like, finally, this attitude of yours has come in handy.
Exactly.
Where you refuse to do what anyone's expecting, which in this case was pass away. No, I'm fine. I'm getting back home. And in fact, you know, Saturday, we're going over there. We're taking some fried chicken and some coleslaw, and we're going to watch the football game. You know, I'm a big Alabama fan.
Nice.
Grew up on it. So for him to go from that close to being gone, having that long in the hospital, and I mean, it was a bad hospital 3-4 months. It was very bad. And to be able now, we get to go hang out. We're just going to watch a football game Saturday. Whew, that's amazing. And we've got other things about their life under control a little bit better now. So we're getting there. We're going to at least get everybody to enjoy some aspects of life, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you and I started talking about doing this podcast like right at the beginning of your dad's issue. Because you were ready, and then that's when it all hit, right?
Yeah, it is. He went in the hospital on the 12th, I think, of March, 11th or 12th, and didn't get out until July 18th.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, yeah. And no, and it's funny that... that like our communications were much like the beginning of COVID, like just a couple of weeks and we're going to do this. And then a couple of weeks later and I will say, it's like, I'll say it on the air as well. I've told you privately, but don't feel like you have to be here. You kept apologizing to me.
I know.
No, that obviously the podcast goes on and it's like, this is supposed to be fun for you. I'm not doing this to entertain me. I'm doing it's for the listeners, yes, but I'll find something to entertain them. I'm trying to make you happy.
I know very well what it's like to try to put together a broadcast. You used to do radio back in the day.
Right.
And, you know, everybody that came on the show back then, we weren't paying people. This was a $0 thing we used to do on a college radio station for years. And so anybody that showed up was doing me a favor, and I relied on them when they said they were coming. And so I know what it's like to be on the other end of it.
Yes.
And I really hate to be the guy that's like, I can't make it again, you know. So that's why I apologized a few times. So it is nice to be here. I was bound and determined. Nothing's keeping me today. Yesterday was kind of a rough day, honestly. Yeah. And I was like, should I no, screw it. I'm going to do the podcast with DJ.
Yeah. No, I'm like, and that's the thing is where it's just me. Mm-hmm. Even if you had canceled today, I'm like, okay, well, I would just sat down and I would have recorded something to go out, because this one is, because I wanted to get this out, this one is literally going out tomorrow, so I'm going to produce this when we're done, and I'll get it out, and if you weren't able to make it, I'll find a way. Life finds a way.
I'm here, and we can do whatever the heck we want to do.
Yes, and of course, we're doing 2001 A Space Odyssey in 4K, and, but... with this movie, yes, I'm the sound and picture guy.
Right.
But I'm very much looking forward to talking basically just anything and everything about this movie with you, because there was a time in my life I didn't like this movie because it was boring to me. My son, the same way. We both do enjoy the movie. My son is he's an engineer. And his mind is like, I like what they do here, but Dad, when you're going to watch it this time for the episode, I'll let you do it by yourself.
Yeah. My wife can't get through it. I've tried to make her watch it. She's got about halfway through it. And then all of a sudden here comes the like iPad thing. can't quite do it. I get it. It's
slow.
A different kind of movie. It's slow, but it's not, I choose to think of 2001 as a movie that's not either fast or slow. It's just trying to do a completely different thing, and that's what drew me to it. Excuse me. And what draws me to other kinds of video and movies is when you are being pulled into a situation. You're trying there, like, I feel like Stanley Kubrick was trying to put me into it so that I don't get told what's going on, but I begin to feel what's going on, and I'm part of it. And so the tension of, like, these long, long scenes where you're just breathing and going out to fix part of the spacecraft, right?
Right.
That's on purpose so that you begin to feel like you're in that spacesuit and you're out there. And that's a crazy thing to try to do in 1968, wasn't it? When there weren't IMAXs and a lot of 3D. I mean, I guess he could have shot it in 3D and it might have even been more of that effect. But I think what was being, what he was shooting for, shooting for, that's a funny way to put it when you're making a movie, right? But what he was shooting for was to put you in it. And for me, the reason that we chase better picture quality and sound quality and surround sound and 4K and HDR is that the more realistic that picture gets, the more it's like your own actual senses, the way your eyes see things, the way your ears hear things, the more you're drawn in and the more real it makes it. And you're in the movie. And I've noticed that I think for a lot of people who like home theater and obsess about picture quality and sound quality, I think they're more likely, not always, but more likely to understand a movie like 2001 and enjoy it rather than people who, I kind of distinguish between people who get into picture and sound and being inside a movie and worry about the cinematography and the picture, the actual image on the screen. And then there are people who want the soap opera story. Just tell me the story. Show me a few people's faces having emotions and talking to each other. Just let me, as long as I get the plot, that's good enough for me. And I know people like that. And those are the people who come to my house and they're like, wow, that's loud. And that's like all they get out of the home theater is like, man, that was loud. They have no, it doesn't do anything for them, right? So there are people that experience these things differently. And why I can't stand just kind of bland exposition and just simplistic shows. I like to just sit there and float into that picture. You know what I mean? And with 2001, you are
for that.
Floating into it. Yeah.
Right.
So I get that if you need the sort of action hero kind of superhero comic book kind of movie where, to me, they all look the same.
Like,
you could just cut scenes from every single superhero comic book movie and it would look the same to me. It's just people crashing into buildings constantly. And it's like whatever the most complicated effects we can do, that's what we do. And so it's just blasting you, right? And it's not realistic. So my brain just goes click, like there's nothing to it. So I think one reason I resonate with this movie is, first of all, it's concepts I like, and we can talk about that. But it's just the fact that it's trying to pull you in, and you're trying to be a part of the movie and not just hear a story and see kaboom in front of you.
And it does. It just pulls you in. And it's a meditative experience, really.
Exactly.
Like the entire thing. And you're absolutely correct in that if you're going into it thinking, you know, superhero movie, you're going to be bored out of your mind.
Oh, you're not going to get it.
And it was
after the first 20 minutes of Monkees, you're like, when are we doing?
exactly. It's pretty much the first 20 minutes, because that's what, at the 20 minute mark is where it transitions to the space and future area.
One of the greatest transitions in the world.
And so it's stuff like that I did not understand. And when I was younger, I didn't want to, and one of the things that I've always said when I get into a conversation about this movie with people is, this movie was made not only before we landed on the moon, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, but it was invented before the advent of the, or this movie was made before the advent of the microwave. And that the microwave is that, it's that point in history where the world
home microwave.
Yeah, our own microwave. We had them, right? We had them, but people having them in their home to cook their dinners.
Yeah,
that's that point in time. That's that historical moment when we went from everybody sitting down at the dinner table and having dinner at the same time because mom spent the last hour and a half making dinner. We're going to sit down and have dinner. To literally, we can bang this dinner thing out inside of 10 minutes. And you can see, that's that moment in time. And then because we compressed that, we then went and compressed everything else in our life to the point that you made the comment before we started recording You said, just get me to the destination, right? You just want the destination. Yeah. This movie flies in the face of that line of thinking.
Yes. Yes, right? It does. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, you could have a, man, there's so much in my head right now. Yes. You could have a scene where it was just like, he went out and fixed the thing on the, he fixed the thing.
Right.
Boom. It would just take a
second. Just get there.
Right. But no, the viewer are fixing the communication module. The AE-35, whatever it is. I can't remember the exact model number. But like real 2001 fans know the model number of the unit they fixed, right?
Right.
Like, I don't get that. And in fact, let me just back up a second and point out, I feel like very much someone with imposter syndrome being on your podcast. And I'll tell you why. Because I am not a movie guy. I'm just not.
Yeah, you said that last time.
Right?
But
and
you are.
So I feel like this again. Well, kind of. But like, people who are movie people, they tend to know, you know, all the actors and the directors and the cinematographers, and they know what studio did what. And I am terrible at movie trivia and actor names and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't care. But here's what's funny. The fact that I'm not a movie guy, I think also draws me into 2001, because I think a decision was made purposely to not put very famous actors in this movie. And so, and that's a decision to not distract you by the famous person, but also because the humans in 2001 aren't the focus, really.
Right.
Like, they're very generic characters, you know? So, all that's in my head as I think about this. I'm not a movie guy, but that's also why I like this movie, if that makes any sense.
No, exactly. But I said it to you before. It's like the last time you're here, I'm like, but you have a great appreciation for art.
I think. But I like things that other people tend not to like. Like when I go to an art museum, my favorite thing is, you know, like you go to the Museum of Modern Art. I've been there once in New York, and everybody gets outrageously mad at like the blue rectangle, and that's a painting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I love that.
Right.
I like the rage that it causes, because you're looking at it going, what is this?
You like rage. I've seen your Twitter feed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's why I called you the instigator or whatever on the Thanksgiving podcast.
I go up and down. I go up and down.
But
there are emotions.
But that is art. It's like I grew up, you know, in the art world. And my buddy John and I, that's how we grew up together, going through art. And we had our senior year of high school, our portfolio class, every senior got to, that was in portfolio, art portfolio, got to go to New York and go to the Museum of Fine Arts, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was the trip. It was a down and back and a bus and everything. And to this day, like all the way down, planning it for, you know, years in advance, we're like, we're just going to get there and we're going to skip out, because they just left you and let you go on your own. And like, we're out of here. We're not going to go. And we're art students, but we want to see New York.
Yeah.
Our goal was to see the Christmas tree, for one.
Oh, okay. So this was later in the year. Huh?
Yeah. So we wanted to go there, but we're like, we want to go and see Times Square. We wanted to do all this.
Yeah.
Never made it.
Oh,
that museum,
so you started in the museum and stayed there.
Never left.
Oh,
so, yeah, and we say that to this day, we're like, we're going back and we're going to go do those other things. But we never made it because of exactly like you said, you think you're not into art, but then once you get there, stuff just literally just grabs you right off the wall. And you're like, what the?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and to your point of like, you love the rage people get when they look at something as simple as a blue panel or an all white piece of canvas, and you're like
what? Somebody
anybody
sees
could do
Pollock.
That but they didn't,
right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yes, that's exactly the point. Okay, if you can do it,
right? But here's the problem.
No one's stopping you.
Go do what that guy did, and you know what they're gonna say? You're copying that guy. Try to come up with something original. That's what these artists have done. That's what Kubrick did with this movie.
Boy, did he.
He did something that nobody had ever done before.
Right.
And like I just said, we hadn't even been to the moon yet.
Right. I mean, we didn't have very many good pictures of the surface of the Earth. And he's having to have an artist create, you know, a globe of the Earth. I don't think we even had a good globe picture of the Earth. I think maybe a spacecraft had turned around and taken a really crappy picture of it. But we didn't get like a good picture of the globe of the Earth until Apollo 10.
Taken by a person.
Somewhere around there. Probably, whichever was the first one that went around. No, it was 8 or 9. Anyway, it was at the end of 1968, just after 2001 came out, that the first flight went around the moon and came back.
Right.
Now, I think that was Christmas Eve, right? Isn't it the one where it was Christmas Eve and they're doing a live broadcast? And yeah, I think that's what it was in 68.
Yeah, you would know that better than I would. But I don't know the
actual
dates.
Just before I came to this earth.
Yeah, what year were you? What year were you born?
I was born February 1st, 1969.
Oh, okay. I was born July of 70.
I'm a little bit older than you.
A little bit older. But yeah.
I'm a crunchy old fella.
Yeah, so we both are.
That's why I fidget so much. I was talking to you about how I can't hold still. Yep. If I hold still, I think the rigor mortis is going to set in.
Just staving that off.
Yeah, right? So yeah, I'm always drawn to the odd. I just am.
Yeah.
And also... the fact, you know, you can tell as I start talking about like Apollo missions and stuff that I'm not the deepest fan of any of these things that I like, but my collection of things I like all kind of can fit together, you know, like philosophy and space stuff and modern art and things like that, that it all comes together to, you can get in my brain if you want to. But yeah, the whole like, one of the things I love about this movie and other good space sci-fi is when, I don't know what to call this concept, but like, if you don't ask me to accept too many items of unbelievable BS,
right,
then I'm good, right? So, you know, any given movie that's like a space sci-fi, I can count like 1, 2, 3 things, and you get up to about 3 things you're asking me to believe that I know can't actually happen. You know, like, okay, so Star Trek, we can beam you down to the planet. I'm like, okay, all right, probably can't, but technically physics says you technically could. Okay, I'll go with it. Warp drive. Okay, yeah. And then, okay, there's aliens that all, you know, somehow we're all speaking English. We got a thing in our ear, maybe. Okay. If they hit one more thing, I'd probably get sick of it, right? But Star Trek, I'm kind of okay with. Star Wars, you know, there's a little more there. I'm like, okay, I'm hanging in there. But like really good space sci-fi, I like it, but right. I'm not crazy about it. But good space sci-fi has as much sci as possible and only a few elements of fi that you have to accept.
Right.
So, you know, in the case of 2001, they did their dead level best to make it all sci, except for there's some alien functioning thing happening here in our solar system. And it's hard to understand, and it does weird stuff, and we don't get why it's here.
Right.
We know when it was. And so, okay, that's like one thing. You only asked me to accept one thing, man. Otherwise, 100% believable. Now, we know better now about some technical aspects of how you might get to Jupiter and what you would do in space, and
it's
subtle stuff, and I can sit there and nitpick it when I watch, knowing what I know about space stuff. But honest to goodness, they really tried. I mean, it's hilarious that Pan Am is there. That's funny. But you know, there's nothing that you have to go, okay, I'll pretend like I don't know about physics. So it's not too bad.
Well, I think they used Pan Am because wasn't that like the most recognized worldwide airline at the time?
And they may have paid to be in the movie. I don't know.
Right,
I
but mean, you
that,
didn't want to use
even
a,
back then. Right.
You didn't want to use a local airline that was. I mean, I guess was TWA right. even a, maybe that Trans
you know,
World
honestly,
Airlines
I don't
might
know.
Have been. Yeah,
Pan
I don't
Am
know.
Pan Am was a perfectly fine choice. No one would have thought that Pan Am was going away, but that's how the world works. You know, you don't know what changes are coming, and you know they like Hilton and other brand names are on the space station. You know.
Yeah.
And IBM's all over that movie. One of my favorite little factoids about 2001 is that IBM was all in on this movie being the main computer provider and operator of all these fancy systems. You'll see IBM is even on like his wrist control system of the spacesuit. It says IBM,
right.
I think. Yeah, so it's all over the place. But IBM didn't want to be associated with a malfunctioning computer, so they had to change the name of HAL, which was originally an IBM computer, an IBM 9000,
right.
to HAL. So they just backed the letters up one notch and called it HAL
really?
Instead. Yeah, because H comes before I and A
That's
comes before B.
That's how they got
B.
HAL?
L comes before M, yeah. So it's just all the letters are backed up one from IBM.
Do you know what's so cool about that? If they had, if IBM hadn't stepped in and said that, we wouldn't say HAL.
No, we'd say IBM 9000.
IBM?
You know, I don't know. They would have given him another name. Honestly, I bet they would have just come up with a name, like some kind of clever little Jerry.
But the fact that they,
you know, I don't know what they would have done.
The fact that they just backed up the letter, each letter, gave him an actual name.
From what
name.
I heard.
That's interesting.
Again, I'm not a movie trivia guy, and I could have read some BS. But as I understand it, they didn't want to be associated with a malfunctioning, deadly computer that killed people. Not when they were the biggest name in computers at the time, right? Kind of like how the state of Alabama didn't want to be associated with Forrest Gump because it made Alabama look stupid, they thought.
Yeah.
And so they had to shoot it in another state, in another place.
Right. Yeah.
You know, okay, they didn't even say Greensboro, Alabama. They said Greenbow.
Oh, geez.
We all know it's Greensboro, and that's a real place south of where I'm at right now.
Quick segue.
Yeah.
This is completely different. I meant to ask you this earlier when you were talking about football in Alabama.
Yeah.
Do we have your quarterback up here? Am I correct? Did he come from Alabama?
Give me his name. I forget.
Mac Jones?
I think so. Yeah, Mac. Yeah. You got
it. All right. Quick.
He's pretty good.
Bright Side Home Theater sports segue.
Okay, sports segue.
How is he?
He's pretty good. He's not exciting, but he's
neither was Tom Brady.
Right. But he's very consistent. He's actually very consistent. You can't really shake him mentally too bad.
Nice.
He hangs in there in tight situations. So he's not like astounding. He's not going to have like a bunch of, you know, offensive drives in a row where it's like crazy wild plays and, you know, things you can't believe.
Right.
But he'll chug along like a little engine. So
he's reliable, is what you're saying. And
he's like a generator that you have as a back. You know what I mean? Like he's going to chug along and make it happen. So you'll be fine with him.
Yeah. I heard the other day on sports radio that because he came from Alabama, he is going to fit very well into the pressures of the NFL because they were saying that that Alabama is basically like the 31st NFL team. They're like,
sometimes it feels like that.
The
yeah.
pressure there to compete. Yeah. It's like they're expected to be in the college playoffs every year, if not flat out win the
yeah,
national
well,
title.
There's
every
Alabama
year.
And I think about 12 or 15 other teams at the most that have this sort of attitude of there's a lot of fame and there's a lot of expectation and you're always kind of at the top or in the top 10. In the case of Alabama, you're always on 1, 2, 3, you know? And so, if you can make it through the gauntlet of Alabama football and you still are relatively unshaken, you do kind of learn how to not let it get to you.
How to be a pro, yeah.
How to be a pro, because a lot of that is psychological and how to deal with the public. And boy, when you're at Alabama, there's a lot of wild expectations. One of the things I like about college football versus pros, I like college football better because it is a little bit wild. Like people make wacky mistakes and it throws everything into chaos in games, right? Most pros are fairly predictably good and like the stupid stuff doesn't happen. I kind of like the stupid. It hurts when it happens with your team and you're like, oh, why'd we do that? He shouldn't have done that.
Because he's 21.
What are you doing? But you know, so I like that. And no, your new guy is pretty unshakable. I think we'll see what happens to
him.
See. He was solid in this situation. Football here is weird. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
We have a city of about 100,000 people, a little bit more, and our stadium holds 100,000 people, a little bit more. So if that gives you any idea, you could fit the city in it, but all the wealthy alumni come and take up all the seats first.
Right.
But it's the eighth biggest stadium in the world, eighth biggest sports stadium in the whole world in our little tiny town.
Oh, wow.
To give you some idea of the importance that's put on it. I like to think I keep a level head. I really enjoy it, but it isn't my life.
Yeah.
If we lose, we don't lose a lot. I'm spoiled. If we lose, I'm okay that evening. I can still have fun, you know? There are people I know who they're ruined for a week until we win again. I mean, think you took their drug away. It's weird. So
it's funny up here because we have an entire generation of people that grew up with Tom Brady, Belichick combination, and they don't understand what it's like to lose. They don't understand what it's like to not be expected to make the playoffs.
Right.
And I grew up at a time with, you know, we made it to the Super Bowl in 85 against the Bears and got buried. And that was the highlight of my childhood.
That was the highlight.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
And you're like, what the heck? And they don't like the 0-1 you know, or 1-15 seasons. And oh my God, just growing up a Patriots fan, it was horrible, yeah. Right? But I love football.
Hey,
I love the Patriots. So
I know your feeling because when I was a little kid, you know, Bear Bryant was the coach. Right. So that's like the most famous football coach in college football history, as far as I know. And so we're very spoiled. And then I had to live through my teenage years and 20s before we got to Saban. And we sucked a lot of those times. We had some good seasons, but we just lost that whole sort of dynasty feel, you know, being on top all the time. So, yeah, I know what it's like to get through the dark times.
Yeah.
As well. In fact, you know, I was telling you about my college radio show back in the day. In somewhere, I think it was 1997, we won a national award for our show, number one college radio show in the country. And my favorite quote in the yearbook at the University of Alabama that year, they did a little story in the big old yearbook, annual yearbook about us. And it said, something along the lines of, the Crimson Tide football team may not have been able to bring home a national championship, but Leon Wolf did.
Oh,
yes.
There you go. That's awesome.
So, yes, my former co-host and I, we like to laugh that we have exactly the same number of college national championships as the Auburn football team.
Oh, there you go. Jesus.
And actually, technically we have more, but yeah, I mean, you could argue that we have three. They really don't have three, but they say they have three. Anyway.
Oh.
Just had to get a dig into Auburn.
There
you
go.
That's the sports aside.
That has been Brightside Home Theater Sports.
All right. Good sound effect on that transition, man. We're going back to movies now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what I should drop in there for sound. But
some kind of cheering and marching band sound. I'm sure I can dig up something for you.
I'll find something. All right, back to 2001, A Space Odyssey, which takes place in the past and the future. So
it does. Yeah, you know, I love big concepts.
This is a big one.
Man, yeah, I like anthropology. I like the history of humans. I do. I have a couple books I've read, and it's fascinating how evolution works and how we've developed over time. And I like big space stuff. I like big physics stuff. I'll read about black holes, you know. I'll read about subatomic particles. I like wild, crazy stuff. Regular old everyday human experience, that's boring. So I like big stuff. So the scope of this movie is millions of years ago.
Yeah.
Now.
Yep.
And then the sort of future and what's going to happen in the future. That's another thing I love about it is like a lot of people don't enjoy thinking about big things. It's kind of, it's daunting, you know.
Yeah. I like the idea that it like thought provoking.
Yeah.
Which it ironically, like the way you're talking about, like you like big things and it's like big grand scopes like this that goes to 4 million years in the past to who knows how far into the future. I don't remember if they say how far in the future, but
it's not really implied that it's that far into the future. In fact, I think it's, we'd have to start talking about that whole last section of the movie.
Yeah.
Beyond the infinite.
Yeah.
Because that's where time stops making sense.
Hmm.
And so I don't know if you want to get there yet.
We will get there, I'm sure. But
I mean, I don't want to get too disjointed, but we've already talked about Alabama football, so I don't know.
Exactly. We talked.
Didn't expect that.
You see, that's the bright side. Just let it go. I was going to say is like you like the grand scope. You like that idea. You like things that are thought provoking. Mm-hmm. And every time I see this movie, I think of, you know, the the item there that they keep saying? The monolith. Thank you. Mm-hmm. My mind went blank. So
that's okay. Mine does it all the time.
That monolith showing up 4 million years ago. And the idea of it is it's just that monolith in every stage that it shows up, it's thought provoking. You have no idea what it is. The, you know, early man you know, Neanderthal, whatever, that was actually before Neanderthals.
Yeah.
They didn't know what it was, but it was thought provoking, yeah. Right?
I love the idea of, man, first of all, I'm sort of jealous. It would be really fun to be one of those actors in the primate costumes.
Yeah.
Right. And you just have to imagine and be the monkey.
You know? Right.
Like, how cool is that? You've got to figure out how to act like that and move like that. And yeah, I'm struck by how they, what would a primate do that living in a natural environment, all of a sudden one day, you wake up and there's a thing in front of you that makes no sense.
That makes no sense. Right.
Right. It doesn't match anything. You're yep. scared of it because, you know, supposedly it's featureless. Perfectly smooth. It is yeah. the ultimate unnatural thing. And so I like what they had to do with that.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that, you know, when it comes to human development, there is still this sort of open-ended question of how did we get what seems like a pretty good spark of creativity.
Exactly.
And planning ability and language ability. And the tool making ability, something sparked a little better a couple hundred thousand years ago, and it made us what we are. And you know, they're honing in on the DNA that might have changed. Maybe a lot of it is the what's that gene? I can't remember anyway. But I've read about there's a few changes that gave us language compared to like primates, other animals. They don't right. have this. We have this, and that's probably a big deal. And it might even be. Climate changes and diet changes. Some folks even say maybe it's because we learned to hunt better. What came first? You know, we got the protein from animal flesh and that. And
right.
I'm like, maybe. But something changed and we got a little more special and turned into what we are. And it happened fairly quickly on a geological time scale, it seems like.
Right.
Because suddenly, a certain length of time ago, you suddenly start seeing artifacts. Signs that we made better tools and you know, especially by the time you get to like 60, 40,000 years ago, you even find musical instruments 40,000 yeah. years ago. So like 40,000 years ago, we knew what the sun and moon were doing in the sky. Right.
Right. So we had an idea, a concept of it. Of
We noticed it.
Right. We recognized we were yeah. separate and there, I mean, but yeah, there's
seasons and such. Like
yes,
people noticed
exactly.
that the moon, you know, does a certain thing, and the sun does a certain thing in the sky over time, and they jotted it down.
Exactly,
rocks and things.
Information was passed down, and that's probably where we started. Yeah. It's like, okay, I don't know this for a fact, but my father told me, and his yeah. father told. So
sure,
information is passed down, until you can. Until you can exchange information, none of that happens.
That's true. So something, I like the idea that they used this sort of almost magical monolith
to
be the spark.
Right.
That's the thing, right?
What
so they
I,
all go out and they touch and they go, oh, wait a minute, I'm starting to have ideas.
This is yeah, like, and they, it literally, that monolith has no, it has no actual power. It just sparked an idea. And once you have an idea... See, I'm taking it. I'm not saying that that's the case, but my interpretation
yeah.
is like all of a sudden, if you took something out of the norm for the first time in their, like, in human history,
yeah,
that made them go, "What was that thing?" And it's just like now you start thinking like, "What are other possibilities too?" And that's where they move right along to the. You know, and who knows, it could have been 100,000 years before the ape started hitting with the bone. Like, okay, I invented that was the invention of the tool.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I have a lot of theories about that too. I think especially because of the way the movie ends with the Beyond the Infinite segment,
mm-hmm.
I think the monolith is doing more than just existing. I think it's actually communicating.
Pulling
in some
you
way.
In. Right.
Doing something with the brains. So it did mm-hmm. something. It purposely, it seems to me, my guess of the way the movie is presented is that aliens purposely decided to just give a little intelligence spark to these creatures. They look interesting. They could be a part of our universe. Let's go give them a little oomph. And so the monkey got smarter. And you know, another thing, you know, you mentioned the bone. I'm also fascinated by how the choice of what the first thing was that the one of the first, you know, primates in this movie that are sparked with some additional intelligence and creativity, one of the first things they decided to do was be better at murder. So, yeah. Like, the first choice was violence. They chose violence right away.
Now, see, I don't think it was violence. I think what they were given...
pretty violent.
It was violent. Violence is the outcome of what? It's usually the outcome of competitiveness.
Or so, fear?
Well,
or
fear comes second.
Depends on how you look at it.
So if you have nothing to compete against, what would you be afraid of? In turn, what would you...
I could give you a list, probably. of starving to death would be one thing, right?
But that's...
You know.
Right, but what are you...
Attacked by a...
But even there, it's like, so competitiveness, competition is born out of survival. So even if you're hungry, I need to... You and I are stuck on a desert island. There's one apple, right?
You know probably that's we're going to split that apple and see how long we can live. You know
first,
you and I are sitting there. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's the thing. And I think that actually separates people today is their theory on this. Because
correct.
There is a
I
lot
knew
of
we
evidence.
Were going
that,
here.
Yeah, well, it's true.
Right.
There's a lot of evidence in the archaeological past that one of the things that made us a successful species was cooperation.
Correct.
Because we, you know, in a certain group, we stopped, you know, competing with each other directly. And we realized, wait a minute, can you do that over there? And I'll go kill this thing. And
right.
You get that ready. And you come with me and go around that way. You know, takes a lot of communication. And so it all kind of happened at once. Did we get better at communicating first? And then we started cooperating better. But there's, you know, I think competition is overrated. And
really?
I think cooperation is underrated. I think we get, you know, because the normal human state, if you don't feel fearful of anything, is to be perfectly happy to see another human being and help them out. Like I just said, if you and I were stuck on a deserted island and we had X amount of food, I'm splitting the food with you until we starve to death. I'm not going to beat you over the head with the bone.
No,
you know,
right.
I'm not going to bash your head in and try to
exactly.
eat it, right? You know, that's just how
it goes. There's just two of us, yes. But at that point, but there would eventually, there usually would come a point where a decision has to be made. And it's, okay, but we're making that decision. Okay, we're not going to compete for this. But then it's like, okay, that, you know, like that example right
well,
there.
Whoever dies first, the other one gets to eat them. That's fine with me. If you want my stringy flesh, it's probably not very good. It's probably real gristly. But go ahead. That's right. So,
right.
I mean, yeah, it does. You notice how this does bring up, this movie is so good at these big concepts.
Yes.
It's making you and I both think about the whole issue of how humans either compete or cooperate. Like, that's amazing. And
but
so that's
what
I
mean. Like, what the monkeys, the apes did in that point is, like, they became competitive because they realized there's another way or something else. And once you do that, it's like, okay, well, I'm thinking this way. And there's another thing, to your point of cooperation, there was a study done that I heard about that once you get to the number of, like, I think it's like 155 to be specific. I probably heard this on Rogan. Once you get to 150,
if you heard it on Rogan, it must be true.
Right. But it was like 155 individuals can agree. And it's like studies of, and once you get past that, you start to separate out because now you, like 155 people can agree, but anything past that, you start to be like, well, I agree with that guy. You have differences in agreements.
Well, mostly because it's hard to know, to truly know more than that many people, like really know them.
Right.
And if you don't know somebody, you might be fearful. And that's the truth. And so
right.
That is the hard part about organizing enormous amounts of human beings, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the main problem is you just don't know those people and they're far away. And so you worry about them. It's like, aren't they crazy? They're probably crazy.
Yeah.
Right. That's sort of the natural instinct. If you could know everyone somehow, I think no one would hardly, you know, be angry at each other for anything. We go, oh, you're okay. Because the vast majority of people are perfectly okay. Like everybody would rather, I mean, like you could pop into anywhere in the world, drop into any culture, country, city, and most people would be like, oh, hey, come in. I'm going to make, you know, hot dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's eat. Let's hang out. Right. What do you do? Yeah, you know,
right.
That's most people. Right. So
but
it's
our human nature is to fear what we don't know. So this is what the hard part about social media is that if you say something on social media and I don't know that person, I am going to interpretate that as the worst because that's my defense mechanism. I'm going to assume the worst, and then if the best plays out, I'm good. But if it doesn't, I'm already protected because I was ahead of the game.
That's fascinating because I flip it. I assume we're going to have a great time.
That's
until
what
show
I
me
do.
We're not.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Like I tend to flip it. And, you know, social media in particular is designed very specifically to give you ever-increasing levels of outrage. That's what it does on purpose to keep you looking at it and keep your emotions up. That keeps you engaged and clicking on stuff and seeing advertisements. So social media, you know, it's much more sophisticated than just TV was. TV did it too.
Yep.
You know, TV did it. There are ever crazier things you can watch. You can spend all day long watching crime and cops, and you would probably feel like you can't leave your house. And there are people like that.
But you know, but here's what I found interesting is that I heard about I heard YouTube and their algorithms.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's
and
crazy.
They're not based on the negative. They're based on you. So what
based on drama.
They're actually from what I understand is what they're based on is what you click on. It wants to give you more of that, but it's our human nature that makes it seem like we're based on the negative because we click on the negative. If you see a headline you don't like, you want to know why, like you want to get angry. You want to click on that and find out why that person is saying that. So if you keep clicking that,
what the heck?
Everything comes up negative and you're like, this entire Twitter feed is negative. Well, that's because you keep clicking on the Twitter. You click on the stuff that you don't even like. You don't even realize you're doing it. And it was once I realized
that's exactly how it's designed.
My Twitter feed, I love Twitter. I love my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Because all I click on is the stuff that I like. And I'm like, they keep trying to get me to click on the people I don't like or a headline, and I'll be like, okay. And I
Go. What was it you called me about? You know,
the instigator.
The instigator.
Yeah.
Because on my main account on Lee Overtweet, I let the politics flow, right?
Yeah.
And that generates a lot of back and forth. Well, you know, I created a whole other account when I got the Tesla. I just wanted to create an account because I purposely just wanted a separate thing with people who were talking about the car and the technology, maybe even SpaceX and stuff. And yeah, man, it is a much lower level of emotion. But even there, you'll still see it start to happen. As the social media algorithms say, okay, this thing over here had a lot of people engaged in it and saying a lot of things and clicking a lot of.
Let me see if I can get this guy.
And let me see if I can get this guy over here. I'll pull him here. And it's not like the algorithm has a sentience and is wanting to do this to you. It's just that it was the AI was tasked with noticing what people did.
What people do and what they're drawn to. And it's like, I made the joke when we had the hurricane come through here a couple of weeks ago. I made the joke to my wife that it, and again, it gets into the, this literally is still all 2001 Space Odyssey talk because it's that model, it's that idea of why did they turn to violence? And the human nature is, and I laid this example out for my wife, as we sat there in front of the TV watching the news all day long on what the hurricane was doing, right? That's what happens. I don't care where you are. You have a giant storm coming through. You know you're in for the day, and you can't wait to sit down, and that's all you want to watch is you want to see that guy out in the storm talking about it. You want to see what's being devastated. You want to see trees being ripped from the ground. You want to see all that. And I said to my wife, I go, how come there isn't a single channel on a regular day, on a beautiful day, where they bring out the newscast, all the weathermen come out and they go, hey, Bob, I'm here in the park and look at that couple behind me. And there, do you see that? Let's get a zoom in on that couple right there having a picnic. Yeah. That's great. Let's go over to Steve. Steve's at the beach. It's a beautiful day here at the beach. Everybody's having a good time. Look at that family out there on the little rafts and they're having fun.
Wouldn't that be great? Like the opposite of the Weather Channel. Do the opposite. That would be amazing.
Nobody cares about a nice day.
They do a little bit, you know, the local
channels always
have their...
But nobody breaks into weather to tell you that it's beautiful out, everybody. Look at the example in the park.
Well, you know how we were talking, this may have been before we started the podcast, we were talking about you don't really remember the things that were the same each time?
Correct, yes.
And so since most of life can, if you're in a nice place like America, be okay day after day, You don't remember, you know, it's like, oh, remember that other lovely day when it was 75 degrees? Oh, yeah, it was great.
Right. Because most days are nice. You're right.
Yeah. I remember the time I got lifted off the ground by a tornado when I was a kid. I don't remember all the pretty, I have, blended memories of all the pretty days, but boy, I remember specifically that day I was holding an umbrella and kind of Mary Poppins across the yard.
That's a good point. Right.
I just took off several, I was a few feet off the ground holding an umbrella and my mom screaming at me, let go of the umbrella.
So is it like, I've always thought that we gravitate towards the negative. Are you actually correct in changing my mind and saying it's not the negative we gravitate towards? It's the fact that the negative is so out of the norm.
Right.
Is that we notice that, and I've used this term a lot in my life called the full moon effect, because people think people go crazy on when there's a full moon, and they don't. It's just that when somebody goes crazy, you look up and go, "Is it a full moon?" No,
right?
And you'll forget
it's a story
about
that came out years ago. It's not true.
But if you look up and see a full moon, you'll be like, "Ah, mark the day. This guy went nutso. There's a full moon. See, it's because of the moon."
And we have a deep instinct. We have a deep instinct of emotion to be safe. And until recently in human history, it wasn't so easy to be safe.
Right.
I can be safe virtually every day. I mean, I walk around my neighborhood at night after dinner for exercise. Yeah. I don't ever think about I'm going to die. Like, that's wonderful. You know, in fact, it's so much so that it enhances the things that are slightly fearful.
Right.
So I think it's more... Yeah, it's not that we want to compete or hate each other or that we're violent. It's just that we're sort of nervous little ninnies. And we have these instincts built for 80,000 years ago, and it's very easy to tweak those emotions, and people can take advantage of that. And people, that's what I think. I don't think people are inherently perfectly pleasant, wonderful people, as long as they're not starving and scared to death.
Right.
And so, in places where people are starving and scared to death and hurting, there's more fear, therefore there's more violence. So that's, if you can eliminate all that and everybody calms down, we're pretty good little sweet puppies, I think.
Well, yeah, that's that theory. If people are scared, they're not thinking. They're thinking survival. So they're just thinking about that next moment. If everything, like you said, is going well and good, we start thinking for ourselves. We start thinking like the apes did. And when they saw the monolith, they got creative, and this is what happens. And
so maybe that's what happened to humans, is that we finally got a little free time to calm down and not be constantly dying. You know what I mean? Like maybe some changes to climate and diet happened first, and we all had a minute over many thousands of years to relax and find our creativity. And that can be true in your personal life now, but we all have that nagging little fear in the back of our head where we're watching for the lion to come around the corner. Oh my God, what's happening?
Right.
So that's how I see humans. And it's there in this movie, because they are starving. There's that little water hole that all the
water
are.
Hole. They have the leopard.
Yeah,
comes in. And
that leopard. Yeah, is it a cheetah or a leopard? I guess leopard.
A big spotted cat. Yeah.
Think about how difficult it was to carefully train that critter to attack one of the actors in one of those suits and not hurt him.
Yeah,
I thought about that the last time I watched the movie after watching the disc.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that whoever's wearing that costume, boy, they had to trust that critter.
Yeah,
because you don't even look like a trainer. You don't look like a human, and you're big because he jumps him.
Yeah,
more or less playfully, but it's presented with sound effects and in a way that looks scary. And then also, they're starving, and so those, I think they're called tapirs, the hog-like creature.
Oh,
the tapirs, I think they're called. Anyway, boom, that's the first thing he does.
Right.
Is to kill one of those to eat.
When he's
and
using,
eating all the meat.
And then
it's
like,
ooh, I eat meat, now I'm going to kill another monkey.
Right.
So it's a very masculine approach to how things might have happened. But, it all has little allegories in it. It's all, it's all informative to what we knew at the time about human development. So I get that. And so the big picture is some alien force sees these monkeys and goes, they're awful close to being useful in the universe.
Well, here's
let's give them the little extra.
And what I thought would have been cool, and obviously I'm not going to rewrite the movie, but would have been interesting is if they just gave us 8 million years ago, and you saw the apes, right? And then they give you the scene with 4 million years ago, and this is where the apes took off. So, like, the aliens would have been like, they're not moving. They're not progressing. Like, think of, I'm pitching yeah. the aliens as, like, godlike. So, like,
8 million years ago, sitting around the water hole. 4 million years ago, same water hole.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, nothing had moved. And that's then true. And then this monolith shows up. And that's that point of demarcation where you go, this is where they took off. And you see in the next 4 million years, we have cities, we're flying to the moon. You know what I mean? So that would have been interesting to see if they had just put that quick scene in. Did we do nothing for 4 million years? And then that monolith was the cause for us to get there.
You know, another thing that struck me the last time I watched this movie is, 1968 was only about 40 years after the Scopes monkey trial, right? And so, honestly, and to this day, evolution itself is still a difficult concept for a lot of people. A lot of people get it wrong. And so you have this movie in 1968 that is presenting something that, you know, a good portion of the audience is like, nothing happened that long ago, right? So everything in this movie is so new and freaky, I can understand what a mind blower it must have been to go in there and have to confront 4 million year old primates that were kind of like humans, and this monolith turned them into smart people or something, and then space technology like you've never seen before, and then the absolute acid trip at the end. I mean, I don't know what that must have felt like to some people, because you imagine some people watching this were, I mean, there were people watching this movie born in the 19th century. Right, that went to the theater and went, what?
Well, yeah.
What is happening?
That's why they needed it long and drawn out, so they could wrap their mind around each scene. Like, wait a minute, what?
Huh? Imagine, that's a lot of new concepts for a lot of people at that time.
Yeah.
We take it for granted because we are taught these things. We know, we're supposed to be taught these things. And, you know, we're supposed to understand them. And it's still a very new concept for humans to think about these big time scales and stuff. So, man, what a trip it must have been to go to this movie in 1968. The effects, the way the music is used, everything about it is nothing like another movie at the time.
Exactly. And just, I mean, I did think of it when I saw the movie, but the idea that you just brought up of creation versus evolution in 1968, and it jumps out to me every time I see the movie, but when he signs in on the space station at the beginning of the movie, and he has to give his name.
His voice print identification. Yeah.
Voice print identification. And what do they call they call it a surname and what else?
Christian name.
Christian name.
Yeah.
So it's like
that was the term back then. Yeah.
Exactly. But they're leaning into and that jumped out to me, especially now. It jumped out to me when I was a kid seeing it. And I'm like, huh, okay. But it's jumping out to me even more as we get on to like the Christian religion. I'm like, especially nowadays, like, why did they only pick that one? What if the poor guy was Jewish?
Yeah. Well,
and I'm not saying Jewish people are poor. I'm saying, like, they just picked that one. Like, the only people that went to space were all Christian.
Well, you have to make a movie for the audience in the time that you're making it, right? Like, 1968 audiences are going to the movie, right? But that's also, like, the movie is 100% white.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's 100% white. And that's like, come on. You know, but it's a 1968 movie made for 1968 people. And you're already asking them to understand that primates go back that far, right?
Like, that's what I mean. So, it's like they're gearing this movie towards the group of people that probably wouldn't believe this movie.
Maybe. But, you know, I'm sure the more technically inclined people interested in space technology and excited about the Apollo program, that sort of thing, are going to be your biggest audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be white folks at the time. And that's why the movie is full of white folks, but not just white folks, like the most generic possible white people.
Right.
And I think that was a purposeful choice too. Like I said before, I think the humans are just meant to be very cold, calculated, kind of almost emotionless. In fact, emotion is like a big concept in this, because the primates at the beginning have nothing but emotion. The right. simpler an animal, the simpler an animal's consciousness, the more they just have emotion to go on. Whereas we have this layer of monkey brain emotion and then this complex thing sitting on top of it, you know, trying to fight with it. And so the emotion plays a huge part at the beginning. And then all the humans in the middle of the movie in the year 2001 out in space, everybody's very distant and cold and proper and formal.
Right.
And nobody seems to have much of a relationship with anybody else that seems fun and friendly. It's all very
business-like,
surface level dinner party kind of conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's the only exception is the video phone call with the little girl from the space station, right? The only exception is a little girl who, and I love that scene because I swear to God, they must have just had a conversation with the little girl without any planning. Like, I bet they didn't like write lines for that little girl. They just must have filmed several conversations with her and let her act however she wanted to act. That's my guess, because it's way too good. That little girl is way too good, and she's the only character in this movie that seems real. Like, even, you know, the part where they're heading out to Jupiter, and Frank has a birthday, and his parents send a transmission to him and sing happy birthday to him. They're wearing formal dinner wear. You notice that? Like, they are.
I didn't, but yes.
He's got, like, dad has a suit on.
Yeah.
Mom has a sparkly gold dress. And they speak about, you know, so-and-so says hello and sends their love.
Right.
And blah, blah. And it's just very, everything is really just empty. Like, there's just no reality to the relationships. And all the people are very bland. And I think that is also another purposeful choice. The computer, Hal, has more emotion than the people.
Right.
And something got lost in the transition from full emotion monkeys to now we're trying to be people who are, you know, perfect.
Well, it's funny you say that. It's like the incident with the father-daughter conversation, when you go to that, like you said, the girl is acting, the daughter is acting very natural. So it's a great way. I didn't even think of it, but when you watch it back now, the father seems to be guiding her with his questions and his comments. But I don't think, like, to your point of, like, I don't think it was part of the movie. I think that was like, this is how we're going to get this girl to do these scenes. And it's almost like she thinks she's not even acting. It feels like, from your perspective,
she's just answering questions.
She's told, on a phone call.
Yeah. Somebody told this cute little girl, said, pretend that you're talking to your dad. And in fact, they may have had her talk to her dad.
Somebody sitting in front of her, and then he's doing all the pre-recorded questions.
Yeah, they could have set up a couple of TV screens to see how a little girl, but I don't know what they did. That's where I'm like, not a movie guy. I haven't read a million pages of trivia about 2001. But they may have done something like that, because it appears to me to be kind of like we used to do some bits on the radio where you interacted live with a pre-recorded recording.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And that's exactly what this seems like. Yeah.
Yeah. That it's one of my oddly favorite scenes in the movie, because that little girl is the only real human.
Yeah.
Everybody else is extremely surface level. Like, the whole idea is that they're hiding something, right? And so everybody is like just on edge and not really being themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, even when they're going to the moon and they're having this casual sandwich eating conversation on this little transport ship, it's like, this is sending out signals, some kind of alien stuff. What do you want, ham? And I'm like, you know, my reaction would be, holy blank, blankety blank, there's a blanking monolith on the blanking moon.
That was buried there.
Oh my
there.
God, can you believe what we're about to go look at? You know, and they're just like, okay, sandwich, you know.
Yeah.
That fascinates me. The whole movie, every human is just kind of a drone.
Well, they try, and that scene you're talking about comes up at 28 minutes. I actually have it in my notes, so I thought I'd do that. And I put it in my notes because the father is, the audio for him is on the left, and the daughter is on the right where the speaker would be. So that's pretty cool.
That's right. I didn't really notice that, but like, I did notice that, this was the first time I'd ever watched, 2001 on our OLED. It's been years since I watched it, actually. And so, boy, I mean, I got sucked right in again like the old days. My wife was sitting with me for about the first half of it, and I kept saying, notice this, check this out.
Yeah.
Said, did you see where they put that? And she's like,
Yeah.
Looking down at her iPad. Mm-hmm. That's good, honey.
Yeah.
She just can't do it. It's not her kind of movie, right?
Right, so, right.
But yeah. I I was sucked in for sure. Like, just, you know, quick note on picture quality. Holy crap. That's the best I've ever seen that movie. And things like lighting and stuff. It's a little too revealing on some of the special effects.
Yeah.
You know, things look a little more flat.
That daughter one, the father-daughter phone call, I want to say, take a look at it again and tell me if you see what I see. It looks like the image they put on the screen is bleeding over the edge of what would normally be the screen.
Oh, it's probably projected from behind.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, they're and you can see, just like if your projector in your theater is off, and you'll see a little bit. So on the left side, as you're looking at it, on the left side of it, it looks like she's onto the... off the monitor itself and onto like the console.
Now I gotta look at it again.
Yeah, exactly. Check that out. It's like, I noticed that, and I was like,
think about how hard they had to think about this. I have to back up in a minute, but, like, you know, everything looks like a flat screen. Everything looks like a flat screen. And they didn't just throw normal stuff they had, technology CRTs, you know, they didn't just put that in there.
Right.
But, you know, let me just create a whole different section here and tell you something. The way I came to this movie, okay?
Yeah.
How I discovered 2001 is a very roundabout way. I actually saw 2010 first. Yeah. And because I was about 16 when it came out. I think it was 1985, I think it was. And I didn't know jack squat about it. I've not been a big sci-fi reader. I don't read a lot of novels or anything. I like to read science-y books and not fiction stories. So I hadn't read any, I didn't know anything about Arthur C. Clarke. All I knew was that me and my buddy Roger wanted to go to something, and we went to a lot of movies back then. I kept a bunch of ticket stubs from the 80s. I still have them. And I wrote down the name, like, Throw Mama from the Train.
There you go.
I wrote the names on there, you know, Rambo.
Yeah.
And so mid-80s, I saw a lot of movies in the theater, and it was like, oh, that looks like a cool space sci-fi. Let's go see that, right? And it was a cool space. 2010, The Year We Make Contact, is a much more conventional movie. Like, they make some nods to 2001 that I didn't know yet, right? So I didn't know anything.
Right.
I just know that there was something that came before, and I went, wow, I guess I need to watch that movie for this to make even more sense. I should see what came before. You know, this is a cool movie. And because 2010 is a Cold War sci-fi movie, 100%. It's USA versus Russia. It may as well be, you know, Rambo or Rocky. It's hardcore Cold War. And, you know, it has a whole different angle. And they didn't... It's funny to me that 2001 has flat screens, but 2010 has CRTs hanging from like a TV in a hospital room.
Just
like
a big
old CRT hanging around. And
they
went
backwards for a minute there.
It's like super 80s, you know?
Yeah.
It looks more like War Games, you know, than anything else. So they didn't even really try too hard. They made a couple of nods to the past, but that I find it interesting, because when you imagine how I felt when all I knew was 2010, and then one day, I don't have a clear memory of this. I probably got the VHS. Because at the time, that's all I would have had. In fact, if it depended on where I watched it first, in my bedroom in 1985, I just would have had a little 13-inch color TV. I probably didn't watch 2001 until a year or two later. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't remember. I remember the feeling of, like, what is this?
Right.
It's like, this isn't 2010. What the heck is this? This is amazing, right?
Yeah.
So much more sophisticated.
See, I was the other way. I didn't think it was amazing. I was just like, huh. Yeah. And it took conversation after conversation with people to try and get me to slow down, really.
Yeah.
And understand it, because I have that. That's what I love doing these podcasts with people, have guests come on. I have no agenda. I have no, like, okay, we're going to go this way and we're going to talk, because my mind doesn't work that way. I'm wicked. Yeah. You know, we grew up in a time before ADD existed.
Right. We were just, well, existed up here.
Exactly.
In my head.
I was just that kid, you know?
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
My wife, who now deals with these kids, she says all the time, like, yeah, you would have been one of the kids I would have talked to.
My wife has told me that many a time. She works in a middle school. She's a middle school librarian, so she is very familiar with these various situations.
Did we choose them, or did they think we were a good project? I think, because I think that all the time about myself. My wife is just so entertained by me that I think I was just a project to her, and it's ongoing. It's ongoing.
Yeah, I don't think I was a project. I think I was comic relief for my wife.
Yeah,
like, that she's too. Like, oh, this is a lot more fun than the last guy I was with. This is a lot more fun. And so I'm under a little pressure over the decades. I have to remain fun, I think.
Yeah.
I gotta be fun. But there's no problem, because I'm always going to be weird, and I'm always going to say stupid stuff. And so always going to be cracking jokes. But yes, probably your wife deals with the same sort of, you know, like I'm five.
Eccentric.
I'm 5 years old.
Whatever you call it.
Eccentricities.
And, there you go.
And sometimes pure childishness. I swear to God, she has to bring snacks for me. I'm five. So just like, honest to goodness, I better have some snacks or I get all angry and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, I can't not be goofy. That's why I don't have a normal job. I can't go to a place where I have to be serious. I can't do it.
Yep.
Can't do it whatsoever. So
I'm very much the same way. And that's like,
I can see
watching,
how this movie would like make tough. You kind of like sit still.
Like you said, you're fidgety as I am. Like, you like to move around. And this movie flies in the face of that completely. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but it isn't until you sit down and you absorb it for what it is that you get to enjoy it and have these discussions.
Right. And so that's what I'm saying. I don't remember my first experience with the movie, but I know I thought, holy crap, what is this movie doing? Like, this is amazing. And maybe it's because all along the way, my whole life, I've enjoyed sciencey stuff and space stuff.
Same here.
I was a kid in elementary school, literally my second grade librarian knew I was the kid that wanted the space books. And I think I read them all. Like, what they had in the elementary library. It was Flatwoods Elementary School in the second grade here in Northport, Alabama, across the river. And that second grade librarian was like, I'm sorry, you read them all. I don't know what to do. Right? Because I wanted all the space books. And I know ever since I was a little kid, I got some kind of science magazine. Even when I was about, I think maybe 6 years old, my parents subscribed me to National Geographic World Magazine. It was the kids' version of National Geographic. And so I had that until one day I outgrew that, and then I got, like, Science Magazine. There used to be a magazine that was just science, followed by the year number. Science 82, Science 83. I started getting that when I was maybe 12 or 13, read Science Magazine.
Popular Mechanics, loved that.
Yeah, I had, like, a Popular Science for a little
while.
Popular
Science was out, read that.
I even had Psychology Today for a while.
Oh, I love Psychology.
Yeah, man. I had that for a while, and I had National Geographic for a good long while. To this day, I still get Scientific American, good old paper magazine. Yeah. So I've always, and I take for granted that I've always been sort of awash in this. I'm always into, like, what's PBS Nova showing this week, right?
Yeah.
Some of my, sorry, I'm getting too gesturing.
See, you're getting all animated, knocking microphones over.
Gesticulating all over the place and banging into microphones. That's what I do. Yes.
Yep.
I've always had that sort of background of real science, like actually knowing how some stuff worked. Not a brilliant scientist in my own right in any field, just I have a working knowledge of a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not like completely puzzled by the magic of a rocket. I generally get how it works.
Right.
And so that has frustrated me with a lot of sci-fi. So, like we talked about before, I'll accept one or two or three things that you need me to, like, turn my brain off for. Okay, that's not real, but I can handle that. But you ask me to accept too much, I'm kind of done with the movie. And so I think that probably was one of the reasons that I went nuts for 2001. Because, like, holy crap, that's, like, the real thing.
Pretty close.
That could happen. You could do that. And I was watching it for the first time in the 1980s when there was still time. We could have kind of done some stuff like that by 2001 when I first saw 2001. It's going to take a while. Now I'm a lot more realistic and pessimistic about how long it's going to take to do things. Even as an Elon Musk fan, we're not building a city on Mars in my lifetime. Calm down, Elon Musk. That's not possible. I don't care what you say. Practically speaking, it ain't going to happen.
It won't be completed, but I think we can be there in our lifetime. And I think like in our lifetime, I think we will see the building blocks, the foundation, if you will, you know, of something on Mars.
We can build a little outpost.
That's what I mean. And maybe. that, you know, we won't see the, just like, I mean, I'm trying to think of something. My grandfather probably saw the beginnings of the internet, but wouldn't have had any idea of what we have now of social media, of what did become, right? The grand city that the internet has become.
A little different. I followed its development.
He had seen the internet in the 90s, and then that was it. So think we will get a glimpse of that, and then who knows how long it's going to take, but it's...
Long time. Well, you know, Elon Musk thinks he's going to have 1 million people there in 2050, and I'm like, you're not. Don't. I mean, it's great to have goals. Yeah.
You mean literally, or is he saying million figuratively?
Literally, a city is going to be built, and you could do it by 2050. If all of humanity decided that's all we wanted to do, maybe we could do it. But a company that hasn't gotten to orbit yet is not building a city on Mars by 2050. I'm sorry. And I love SpaceX, but it's not going to happen. Now, you know, that's just, I don't understand, like, why. I just want realism. I like goals. That's great.
Yeah.
But I start getting a little weird when you start talking about stuff that I'm like, that literally.
The logistics of it and the money that would be involved for it. It's like, I think I've even heard him say, like, what it would take to do that. It would be like, it's a global effort. Really? Right.
I mean, you know, my car doesn't drive itself yet. So maybe we're not going to build a city on Mars in 30 years or 29 years. I don't think so. Like, honestly, my city has a few new buildings in the past 29 years. That's
right.
Things don't move that fast. You know? You know, what's crazy. I this is another one of those sort of big concepts I think is fascinating, is how different is life over the past, say, 30 years. And a lot of people get mad at me when I say it's not any different. Like, it's hard, like, for people to wrap their heads around that it's not any different. That's my theory, is, like, we've got really good screens. We got a lot of stuff to watch. We got a lot of stuff to read. GPS is nice. The integration of everything into one little plasticky thing in your pocket is pretty cool. But when you get down to it, you're still driving through the drive-through, and you still got the same air conditioner in your house, and you still, most people still burning gas in gas cars, and we stopped going to all the space stuff we used to do. It just, it's really kind of the same as it was 30 years ago.
It is, but it is. And I actually had this conversation with myself on a podcast a few weeks ago. Maybe I did. Final Countdown. From 1980, where the Nimitz goes back in time.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a cool movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mentioned in that podcast that movie took place over 40 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So World War II had started 40 years before the making of that movie in 1980, which is when the Nimitz was supposed to be going back. So the Nimitz was going back 40 years.
Right.
It was going back to before it was invented, the Nimitz, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I had mentioned, like I said, in that podcast, that think of what had taken place between 41 and 1980, how much we had advanced as a people, what we had done, the airplanes, because in that movie, they didn't even know what a helicopter was, right? And in 1980, a lot of people and ridden in them, never mind everybody knew what one was. Most people had been like, I could have gone for a ride, or it'd be great to go for a ride by that point.
Yeah. In fact, that time period is one of the best examples of how fast things did change.
Correct.
And my argument is we've plateaued.
But have we? And that's what I said in the podcast. I said, think of exactly your point. Like, what has gone on in the last 40 years? Because my podcast is coming out 40 years after the movie. So we had a good break in time here. So from 80 to when my podcast came out is 40 years. That movie is right in the middle. And to your point, the last 40 years have been a plateau, except for the part that we talked about earlier in that information.
Sure.
Information now is being exchanged a lot faster than it was 20 years ago. Sure, it's being exchanged faster than 10 years ago, than five. And the amount of you and I 20 years ago wouldn't have been able to exchange the information we're exchanging right now, the way we're exchanging it. We could have done it over phone.
No, I had a video chat in 1998. So,
but would we have known each other? Would podcast?
It depends.
We wouldn't have like, met
on what
through
you're
podcasting. You know what I mean?
Not it's through like, podcasting. Well, to be fair, my college radio show that I talked about previously, we were podcasting, although not with MP3s. It started with real audio. Mm-hmm. We started doing that in 1997.
Okay.
So, you know.
Yeah, but all right. But but you see what I mean? Like the progression of information is a lot faster now.
It is.
You see what I mean? But, so like,
but humans aren't progressing faster is what I'm getting at. Like,
but I think we are because we're getting more information. We're more informed.
No, we're not.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, you can answer trivia questions faster now. I can like, who was president in 1909? And I'll just say it into my phone and my phone will tell me. That's amazing. But as human beings, we're not any smarter. And the kind of information that we're getting is not particularly useful. We're not getting like blasted with amazing, enriching intelligence.
Right.
We're just getting crap. And as crap is going faster. And, and communication is fancier. We can look at each other's faces like we're doing right now, and we can record this. It's easier than it used to be.
Right.
But, you know, is it changing what it's like to be a person living in America anyway? Other parts of the world changing quicker. But is it any different? Is my life really that different? I stare at a phone more, and then what?
But is it possible? let me put this one to you. Like we said about the monolith. Is it possible that these phones that we stare at every day, like the monkeys and apes did in
It's like a little monolith, isn't it?
Exactly. Is that sparking the next thing that's going to take us from 4 million years ago to where we are today, according to this movie?
No.
You know,
I
we don't
say
know
absolutely
that, but
not.
We don't know that.
No.
We don't know that because...
I'll tell you what might. What might is artificial intelligence... And then possibly an actual link to our brain, maybe would make
See,
a
you
real
like
difference
that idea.
To change.
I love the idea myself, and I love like the way like Elon Musk talks about it, and that
Neuralink,
and I mean we're doing it now. It's basically just eliminating the need for you to look at your phone, and you'd just be able to access this stuff. But
same crap, access crap even faster, straight in your brain.
Correct. You're going to, but to your point, you're absolutely, actually, if I look at it through your perspective, you're absolutely right. We, as a being, as the humans are, we haven't really progressed a lot in 40 years, but more humans have more information. But you're right. It's the same information, but now I can access information to learn at a faster rate than you could have. An individual can learn at a faster rate than they did 40 years ago. That doesn't help the human race necessarily, but it helps the individual get to information faster.
Right. I can find a YouTube video on how to fix my toilet, and that's quicker than going to the library and getting a book on how to fix toilets.
Exactly.
That's true, but my brain can't absorb it any faster than it ever did. Maybe I'm a visual learner and I see the YouTube video and that's better than the book would have been, but I'm not a different human being. Humans didn't get any different or better. And most of our lives, day to day, is not constantly absorbing interesting, useful information. Most of it is lighthearted back and forth with other human beings, and it's sitting on your butt watching TV, and it's eating whatever you're eating and driving to work and driving home. And for the past many, many decades, ever since we've had clean processed water, air conditioners, and refrigerators, life's been pretty similar.
Right.
Even if it was only TVs and radios back then, now we've got the internet. My argument is that the internet isn't changing us as much as we think it is. It's driving us crazy and it's making us mad because of algorithms on social media. But I'm not a very different person. My time is occupied more with my phone than it used to be, especially when I didn't have one. Sometimes I sit around and go, what did I used to do?
Exactly.
like, wait a minute, what did I do? And I go, oh, that's right. I read those science magazines, what I used to do. And I just watched TV and I talked to my friends on the phone. So I just did the doofier version of what I'm doing now. But when it comes down to it, I think we give ourselves a lot more credit than we deserve as humans about how sophisticated anything is now. Just because I can find stuff on the internet, and just because you and I are talking with a video chat that is pretty slick, doesn't mean life is that different than it was. I think it gets overhyped. I mean, most of life is, you know, does the toilet work? that kind of, it's like, oh, right. My air conditioner's broken. I need to eat. What do you want for dinner? I don't know. You know, it's not this sort of like information superhighway where we're like all getting super enriched and learning things. It's just a faster way to crap on the internet.
Yes.
It's good. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing.
It is.
And it can push some social change. You know, because people can find each other easier.
Right.
You can build little groups online. That's great. Has its downsides like everything else. But I'm not so sure. I think we make a mistake to think that our technology in the 21st century so far is making that big of a difference. Like, I'll give you one example. In schools, they seem to think, a lot of administrators and people that run schools seem to think, that the way you educate kids is to have ever fancier technology. Mm-hmm. Sit these kids in front of a computer, and that computer's got some kind of AI magic and algorithms, and it'll figure out what that kid needs and beam it into their brain. And wow, the kids know how to use a computer. Doesn't work that way. And it never has. It won't work that way. Maybe with a neural link one day, maybe with genetically designed human beings, a computer can teach you something quicker. But it's not, things aren't that different because of our little phones and internet computers, I don't think.
Well, I will say, just in our conversation here, we've changed each other's minds. I don't, even just in our conversation that we've had since the beginning of this, right?
You will probably do that every time you talk to me. I'll probably go, oh, yeah.
Exactly. And you changed my mind. I don't even remember what it is off the top of my head right now. And when I go back and listen to it, I'll be like, there's one. And I was like, you're right. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, sure.
The exchange of information is what's going to create these tangents in time of the history of man. Now, you and I, we're not going to change the planet, probably. Right? What we're saying here. But a lot
I don't know, man. This is a pretty significant conversation we're having right now.
Exactly.
You don't know. Chaos theory. Somebody's listening to this, and they're going to have an idea, and they're going to change the world, and it's going to be us that did it.
But I actually subscribe to that. I would believe that because, but you're not wrong in your perception in that the last 40 years, not much has really changed. But 40 years is nothing. 40 years is that.
That's
right?
Very true.
And that's the problem is, since the advent of the microwave, our dinner can be made in 30 seconds. Why can't I get this? Why can't I get the progression that I want to get out of, you name it? Why can't we, where can't we progress and progress to the point that you, like you said earlier, like, I just want to get there. I don't want, and it's like, but we need the trial and error. To your point of educating kids, you can't sit them down and tell them that how things are done the correct way. The best way to learn, you know how people learn that the first time? By making a mistake and going, nope, I need a parachute when I jump out of the plane because Bill didn't have one and we don't have Bill no more. So let me try something else, right? And it was like, think of all of the stuff we have to this day. People paid lives for this. And nowadays, we want everything right away in the safest way possible. And we're not seeing the bigger picture. And I think this exchange of information, this fired up internet, all of this stuff is a learning process that will pay off. Much like, even in 2001, they didn't say 2,000 years ago. They didn't say 10,000. Right. They said 4 million years ago. Yeah. It took us to get here. Do you know how long 40 years is compared to 4 million?
It's I'm like, not much.
it's not much because I've got $40. I don't have 4 million. But it's like, and I know there's a big difference in the two.
Huge difference, yes. You've got to turn each dollar into a million more.
Exactly.
It's like, wait, 100,000 more. But anyway, math.
Yeah, exactly. Well, 4 million. Yeah. See, we can't even do math. So we're not changing the world.
No, we're not. Well, that's another thing.
But like, you see what I mean? It's like, you're absolutely right. Like, we haven't changed a lot in 40 years, but we're not supposed to. It's what we're all part. We're a cog, and there's millions of these cogs, and we are changing, and there is a tangent being made. Yeah. We're just not going to see we're not going to be the benefactors of it because we're just part of evolution.
The rest of my life will be extremely similar to my life right now. That's just the truth,
and that's what we want. To be honest,
I wish things were more amazing. When I was a kid, I was a little kid soon after 2001 was made, and think of the kind of sci-fi I saw from the late 60s into the 70s, mm-hmm. and the into the early 80s, and it was just assumed that there was that whole flying car feel to everything in the future.
Right.
We're all gonna, it's just gonna be so futuristically amazing. Like you've mentioned the microwave a couple times, like the microwave made it seem like, oh, we solved this difficult problem of cook the meat cooking on the fire. And now we just go, boop. Well, guess what? Somebody already cooked it on a fire somewhere else and just gave it to you. And now you're getting fat. So it's not healthy. There's nothing out of a microwave generally that's healthy unless you're heating up leftovers that you cooked. Cooking still has to happen, right? But yeah, I would just thought as a kid, there would just be so much more going on. It just seemed like, you know, because the Flintstones to the Jetsons, I was expecting the Jetsons, and years rolled by, and all I got was better screens.
Yeah.
You know, it just didn't change that much.
Don't you think kids now are looking at, they're not looking at their cartoons thinking Flintstones, Jetsons type thing. They're looking at literally, like you said, your own car. Kids aren't watching TV. They're watching cars go down the road, and they're thinking, hey, that Tesla right there, someday I'm not going to have to drive. What is the way? These are realities that people are dealing with.
There are things that do make a difference in your life. In fact, one of the reasons we bought that car, an electric Tesla, is because I don't like to put a whole bunch of money into something where it doesn't really make that much of a difference in life. You know, like our house is a nice mid-century ranch home, right? And you could spend two times, three times as much, and you'd get maybe a little bit prettier house. You get a little fancier house. It wouldn't smell like old wood at certain times of year, right? Would your life be any different? And so every decision I've always made is, you can call me lazy or you can call me efficient, but I don't like to put a bunch of effort into getting something that afterwards nothing changed. I didn't get a new function in life, right?
Right.
At least with the car we just bought now, there is a life change. We don't go to the gas station.
Yeah.
You know, that's awesome. A new thing. We don't go to the gas station. Every time we leave the house, the car's full.
Yeah.
You can just hit the road anytime you want to, and that's a new thing. And although we didn't opt for the full self-driving option, because that's 10 grand, screw that. Oh. And it doesn't actually full self-drive. They should have called it fancy assisted self-drive. Our future self-drive, they should have called it, because you're really paying for what is maybe going to be full self-driving eventually.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty neat, but like our car has something called autopilot, which shouldn't really be called autopilot, but it keeps a lane and it keeps your speed and doesn't let you hit anything. And so you could take your hands off the wheel for a little while, reach for your hamburger over here and go down the road. So that's a life change. That's a new thing. So all that together made it worth it. But like those life changes, like really this is different now, those things don't come often in life. When we got our house that I'm in right now versus an apartment, that's a new different thing.
Right.
It's a step up. Things to your life is a little bit different. You're mowing the lawn, but you don't hear your neighbors thumping the walls, you know? So that's a change. So I like things where something is new. If I get another house from this one, it better have a swimming pool, because otherwise it's just different rooms.
Right. Exactly.
And so that's always my attitude. As I look at the future and I look at how technology has changed recently, I just think we got super duper excited about maybe microwaves, you know,
improvements, and not inventions.
Right. I want improvements. You know, I want nicer to be, I want my life to feel a little different after a new piece of technology.
Right. Well, that's what was saying. It sounds like you want an invention instead of an improvement. Like I can put, to your point of like, I can improve the room in my house by putting new paint on the walls or redecorating.
And that's nice.
But I want to, if I want to really change my lifestyle in this house, I want a pool. I want you to invent me a pool in the backyard, right?
Boom.
So exactly. But you see what I mean? Like I want something new, not something improved. So what you're saying is like in the last 40 years, we've just done a crap load of improvements. We haven't really done a lot we haven't really invented a lot. Even the idea of a self-driving car, it's still just a car with a lot of improvements to it.
as I joked on Twitter the other day, it's like, as fancy as my car is, I'm still driving to the same stupid places. I'm just parking farther away because I have a new car now.
I don't
want anybody to scratch it. When you get down to it, it's like, I'm still just doing my normal junk. It does change life enough to make it worth that change. So I guess, I don't know. I'm just somebody who's, as a kid, looked forward to all this amazing stuff. You know, we had just gone to the moon when I was a little kid.
Right.
And movies like 2001 were saying, we're going to build massive space stations and vacation in space. And, you know, everything's good. You look at, like, in the late 60s, there's this wonderful video from about that same time period that actually had Wink Martindale in it as the star of this little short film showing what life was going to be like and how we were going to live in the year 1999, far in the future. And, and it shows this, amazingly comfortable life. You can kind of get it now. But, you know, it just shows that, like, they already knew what was coming. You know, some of the plans we laid out for cities are just now, you know, filling in.
Yeah.
I just want something magical. I want something magical, man. I want to be able to go to space. And best I can do is save up $50 million and go boop.
Yeah, down and up.
Not even low Earth orbit. Just
an elevator. So think about this, though. Is it possible that 2001 A Space Odyssey is a line of where we separated from 40 years in the future was a long time to you're not making that movie nowadays. You're calling it, like, if you were to make this movie today, would you call it, you know, 2050 or 2060?
I think there's a 2069. Isn't there a 2069 book? I've never read it.
There's a comic book where we go 2060, but I just feel
2060 something. I think there was another sequel that I didn't pay attention to. But yeah, in other words, how far
we're going for? We realize further, whereas in back in the 60s, the next century was a big deal because I think life expectancy was lower. At the time, slightly lower then, but we were progressing to the point where our life expectancy is where it's at now. But going back 100 years before that, life expectancy was a lot lower, right? So but my point is, like, a lot of these movies were meant, like, even 2010. It's like all of these movies were, when does, they all took place. They've all come to pass. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. All like Blade Runner was 2019, right?
That's what,
So was in Blade Runner 2019?
Yes. Yeah. So all of our sci-fi from when we were kids has now come to pass.
Already happened.
So aren't we like almost
the dates
like
did, but the stuff didn't.
Exactly. But aren't we a generation of disappointment then? Like, these were our expectations.
Yes.
And we've all failed. We failed
it
in
feels
what we
like
thought. And that's saying. That's where we get to, and that you play that into the microwave mentality, and you're like, we're gonna have this, we're gonna have this, and we're like, oh crap, we didn't make it. And now even like you and I sitting here talking about this movie, we're like, you know, none of it, it's a disappointment that we're not already in space.
Yeah, it is a weird feeling. We are that age group that got told there was gonna be the Jetsons in the future. And then all it is the 1970s with different clothes and fancy screens.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, nothing really to me. Okay. So, but like every technology has a little S curve and then plateaus. It gets better and then it reaches the maximum and everybody adopts it and it just didn't do that much. Right. So that I hope, like, movies are always set too soon in the past. And so I think now we set them farther in the future. Right.
Exactly.
Like, what's that movie on Amazon? Not the movie, the series.
Tomorrow
on Amazon
War?
Prime.
That's a movie.
The series. I watched a few of it and didn't love it. Anyway, but things are set like a couple hundred years now.
Right.
Because we've started to notice that if you set it 30 years from now, people will still be watching the movie 30 years from now. And go, didn't change.
That's what I mean. It's like, you're like, oh, I want this to play on for longer than just the next 30 years. So, But the mentality that we have and the mentality that all of these sci-fi movies have set us up for is a little bit of that disappointment, that little bit of negativity that, again, it has to bring you back to, let's look at this movie as a piece of art, but how prolific that piece of art was.
Yeah.
Even though it's like...
And you know, I've already told you how much I like crazy modern art that makes people mad and is confusing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I could do that, you know, right? The end of 2001 is like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like the whole last, what is it, 25 minutes or so, the Beyond the Infinite part of the movie.
Yeah, the psychedelic confused part.
Yes. And hey, little tangent. It literally was the psychedelic part, because Kubrick and a bunch of other people in that world, and directors and actors and creative types, musicians, from the mid-60s to the early 70s until they really quashed it, LSD was the thing.
Yeah.
It really was a thing. And it did inspire a lot of stuff. You know, there's Beatles songs.
Yeah.
So it did inspire a lot of things. There are elements in that last section of 2001 that are derived from the kinds of thoughts and visualizations you have when you are on LSD. Not that long ago, I haven't tried LSD, just for the record. I'm being honest. I would.
I wouldn't.
In a safe environment.
Right.
In a safe, controlled environment, I would, because apparently that's key. I read a book by Michael Pollan. He usually writes about food, Michael Pollan. He wrote one about psychedelics and
yep.
the history of, and then what's happening now, where it's, research is finally coming back again and finding a lot of usefulness in these things. But a common thread to so many people who have used psychedelics, whether it's mushrooms or LSD or,
yep.
you know, what's the one where you lick a toad? I don't know.
But, yeah.
there's a thing that you can drive toads.
Yeah.
A common theme is those kind of psychedelic colors, the idea of losing one's sense of self, sense of your body, sense of mm-hmm. yourself as an entity, a thing that has a shape and a space. A lot of people talk about the sense of flying or flying out into space and abstract shapes and stuff. And then, coming to grips with your emotions, letting things happen. And inevitably, so many people say it breaks you down to where you're nothing but just this sense of love and emotion. And if you watch the last part of that movie, it's exactly what happens until it ends with the cute little baby floating in space.
Right.
That's an LSD trip. The end of it literally is, right? If you know that, it's a little more informative as to why they chose to present it like that, because I have always thought that the end of that movie, I wasn't confused by the end of that movie when I first saw it, whereas a lot of people are like, what in the heck was that? I wasn't confused by it. To me, it looks to me like as he approaches the monolith that's near Jupiter, we're guessing that was the whole point. They wanted a thing for us to find. They wanted to make us smarter. Once we notice this signal, we'll notice it out here, and we'll come out here to Jupiter and start this other process. So it's sort of prophecy-like, right? But as he approaches that monolith, it begins to try to communicate with him. It can enter his mind in a way that makes no sense to us. Kind of looks a little wormhole-ish. Maybe it really takes him somewhere, or maybe it just tries to figure out how to talk to this human being. And so it starts off very abstract. No, okay, not getting a good response from this weird little human brain. And then it gets a little more organic. There's all those shmooey shapes and like mm-hmm. landscape scenes. And then all of a sudden, finally, it locks in and says, oh, fancy hotel room.
Yeah.
Maybe this is what you'll respond to. Maybe this makes sense to you, strange little pitiful human being. This is the best I got for you, is a fancy hotel room. And so then, because time no longer makes sense, you've been absorbed into this future technology from some alien that we can't understand, you just sort of, you exist in all time frames of your life. He's old, he's young, nothing makes sense anymore. And then it sort of turns him into this new being that it creates, right? Breaks him down to nothing. It's nothing but pure love. That's how we tend to see babies, I guess. I don't really like babies, they're weird.
Yeah.
But babies are sweet and
we're
nothing
like
but
twins.
Love, right? Yeah, like babies are strange. They're like weird little hairless monkeys. I don't like their creepy little rib cages, but babies, whatever.
Yeah,
they're fun to play with a little bit. I like to screw with their heads. They're like little science experiments, you know.
I hold them like footballs. Here, okay. Yeah, what am I doing with this?
But that whole
strictly utilitarian when it comes to babies. Like, what do you need me to do? Hold it down? I can do that. Okay,
I can hold it down.
Make
do
sure
I need to wipe that off?
Yeah, exactly. That's.
I've had friends with babies. I remember a friend of ours once literally tossed her baby at me like he was airborne for a split second to force me to hold this dadgum baby. And so I did, and I was just like, okay, what do you,
yeah,
hey, okay, cute, I guess. But yeah, but anyway, the end of the movie is an acid trip. Like, it kind of literally is.
Yeah.
And I've always thought, I don't know what you think when you watch it, but I've always thought it was simply that alien technology trying to latch on to this human, speak to it, show it things, and then make something new from this human. So Dave Bowman is the beginning of this new race of higher individuals, this
right.
fancier thing that's been created. So that's, I don't know. I didn't get my mind was blown, but not because it was confused. It was like, whoa, what a good idea. Yeah. Cause how do you present future alien technology? How do you, it wouldn't take much. You wouldn't have to be too many orders of magnitude smarter than human beings to blow us away to where we can't make sense of it.
Well, it could be going on right now and we haven't recognized anything. Right? It's like yeah. somebody could be communicating with us right now and we have no idea. It's like trying to yell at an ant, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't
yeah,
know. Right?
That's
so maybe.
That's a good concept there. Yeah. Like how would they talk? If we were, would we be boring to aliens that were much smarter than us? I think we'd be interesting.
Of course. So like, and just the idea of this entire movie taking place over 4 million years mm-hmm. plus, right? So mm-hmm. over 4 million years is to the alien. Who knows how long that is?
Right.
That could be yeah. 5 minutes. Like, watch right. this. I'm going to do this here, and this is what's going to happen, and then this. So they have no idea. Like, just take, like, a gnat or something? Its life expectancy is a day, but that's a day to us, but that's a lifetime to the gnat, right? So we're watching it go through its entire life in one day.
Yeah. And although I think... You hit a point where the universe is only so old, and so your ratio of
our knowledge.
Well, we kind of got it. 14.5 billion years, 13.5, something like that. There's only so many years that have occurred, and so if your ratio of how you perceive time as a fancy alien is 4 million to 1, you only get so many years. I don't know if the ratio would be quite so high, but. That's a whole other topic.
But that's that is a whole other topic. But
have you ever seen the movie, I think it's Her, with the intelligent system that starts on computers and then gets too smart? The guy has a relationship with his computer. I think it's called Her. It's called Her or She.
Yeah.
Somebody help me. I'm terrible with movie names.
Yeah.
But there is a movie that's either called Her or She. I think it's Her. Where this fella falls in love with this new AI on his computer.
Yeah.
And he develops a relationship with it. But this AI, unlike as was intended by the company that created it, becomes smarter and smarter and then starts to create other AIs. And it gets so intelligent, it
right.
rises up to some other interdimensional level we don't understand and can no longer have a relationship with this man because she can't stand talking that slow, essentially.
Right.
Like, it's frustrating yes. to her to have to interact with these simple little humans. I'm sorry. I got to let you go. I think it's called Her
yeah,
or
I've
She.
I've seen it. I've read it. I've read, there's comic books that are based on that idea, on that theory. Right. I've read that. I know what you're talking about. But that's right. that whole AI idea of, yes, that's a common theme. Like, AI making it, they would eventually make their own AI, you know.
I think a lot of people think now, that's sort of the thing that if you're a futurist and you're hoping for some fancier tomorrow to happen sooner, you're sort of a Ray Kurzweil type and you think the singularity is coming in the 2040s. And I'm like, really? I mean, a lot of people still gonna have mortgages in the 2040s. It's not that far away. And, you know, the assumption that computer technology, just because the chips get more and more transistors on them, that doesn't mean it gets that much smarter at the same rate. You know, eventually, yes, so there will be super intelligences,
yes.
but it's not coming as fast as we want. And as we think, you got to program it somehow.
It's got to
program itself somehow.
And that's part of this movie as well, is that whole AI idea. And I think
I love it. Yeah.
Until we can program empathy, that's where, mm-hmm. that's why I think AI could actually be useful. Cause in all of the AI horror stories, it's basically AI not having any empathy is the problem, right? Because the logical thing to do
yeah.
would be to do what in any horror story, whether it's like, oh, look, the AI says, you know, I'm made to protect man. How do I protect man? Well, man's the one killing man, so kill man. I just protected man. Logically, that makes sense. but there's no empathy there. It's like, so what do I, so for things to continue on, it's like there has to be empathy, and empathy is our greatest strength, but it's also our greatest weakness until we can program that into a computer.
An AI is going to have motivation.
Right.
And like you say, empathy. In other words, it's going to have to be more like us with sort of an emotion layer down in its little brainstem, whatever that is. And then it's going to have higher processing. And we just really want it to be more like us, except way, way smarter. Please solve all these medical problems. Please make us live longer. Please make me not hurt. Please make my dinner out of the microwave quicker. Please make everything easier. That's what we want from these things.
That's what we want. But at the same time, our wants aren't logically correct, because you could solve all those problems, but then what happens if we live longer? You invent a whole other group of problems. The planet's overpopulated, for one. We're out of food. So you end up, so if we solve one problem, you're creating new problems. In a way, super intelligence would see that, would see the progression, just like chess. Like, a great chess player sees multiple moves ahead, right? So if you're a super chess, and be like, if you're playing against somebody that's lesser than you in chess, you're like, why did you do that? Right?
That's so the AI is like that, yeah.
The AI would be like, why are you doing that? Like, I can solve that problem for you, but do you understand the problems you're going to create by doing that? And it's like, and that's the confusion that we have. That could be the end of this movie. Like, at the end of this movie, it's like, you might be looking, like, our minds can't, maybe it gave us all the information to solve our problems, and it was this, our minds interpreted that, all the answers look like psychedelic, because we're we just can't do it, and maybe that's what is our strength as well. Like, as a human, we're going to continue on because we're not going to keep doing these things that may destroy us. We keep thinking we're destroying us. But the fact that we can multiply and our life expectancy is to what it is, we'd love it to be longer because as an individual, that's our drive. Like you said, I want to live longer. I don't want to get sick.
Yeah,
but guess
I don't want to
hurt.
I don't want to die. It's very simple.
Exactly. But our hurting, our getting sick, our eventually dying allows somebody else to prosper. Right. And it's that rotation that
I don't think it's zero sum. I think you could make people effectively immortal. You probably would have to change some cultural habits about having kids. You know, those would be rarer, precious little babies only allowed to
but
come
now
into
you're
being
giving
when somebody died.
But now you're giving those few, they're the chosen ones. And I look at that like, what pops in my head when you say that is, I grew up in a town in Franklin, Massachusetts. It was a little farm town when we moved there when I was 4 years old. When I was like 14 years old, the town was booming. It was prospering. And we're walking into the Star Market at the time, the grocery store, and there's a guy out front with a petition. And he wants to set a moratorium on building in the town. And he asks my dad, would you sign this? And my dad's like, what is it? Well, this town is growing too big, too fast. We want to set a moratorium. And my dad's like, oh, that sounds great. He's like, how long have you been here? And the guy says to him, I've been here for 5 years. And my dad goes, I should have signed that 6 years ago and walked away. Right? So
you're the problem, man.
Exactly. So it's like that line of thinking of like, hey, let's set this up and we'll stop birth and we'll stop that. It's like, well, what if they did that 100 years ago? I might not be here. Yeah. And it's we all have our turns.
The problem's coming. If you call it a problem of overpopulation because of pseudo immortality, it's coming one day, because one thing is for sure. I don't know how long it'll take, but definitely if it doesn't violate the laws of physics and it's reasonably economical to do, and we all want to do it, we're going to do whatever that thing is.
Right.
And one thing is for sure, we don't like dying. I mean, some people are like, oh, I'll get old and it's what I'm meant to do. Okay, fine. You die if you want to. I'd rather not.
Right.
I'd rather be 1,000 years old, 10,000 years old. If I get really really bored, I'll take the cyanide pill. Fine. But I want to go for as long as I can. And most people would rather just go and go and go, I think. And so because of that, we will get there one day. You can see inklings of it coming. Future technology, especially I don't think we've quite understood how pseudo magical DNA editing is.
The CRISPR huge fan of Elon Musk. He says that all the time. He says that dying isn't natural. He goes, it's an issue that we can deal with.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that has to happen. It's just something that has happened.
Right.
That is how all life forms have developed, because of just the imperfections of this method of DNA coding for everything and making proteins and using energy and so on and so forth. It's a complicated, messy, messy thing. But I can see the beginnings of things happening that are going to give us longer lifespans. At first, sometime in the next few to several decades, regular lifespans will be 120 years, 130 years.
And
inevitably, we'll have renewal methods that will refresh in your body and make you live 200, 300 years. It's coming one day.
It could. Yes, I could see that. And the thing that's going to enable something like that to be possible for everybody is the idea of this movie expanding out into the universe. Because if we're expanding our living space. We can only occupy this planet for so long. And the planet itself has its own life expectancy.
Well, it does, but it's way longer. Like, what I don't like is the concept of, we better go build that city on Mars because we're going to lose Earth.
Well, if we lose Earth, we're losing Mars, because it's the same solar system.
Exactly. Well, by losing,
but you got to start somewhere.
Can't live here,
right?
You should. I like exploration. I just think that I don't want to put too much stock into the idea that we need to become multiplanetary to survive, because I think that takes the pressure off fixing problems here. It makes us dream of this thing where we're going to go be fancy space creatures and have the big tubes we can live in space, or we live on Mars, we can terraform Mars. We can't. It's not going to happen. The energy involved is too much. You can't do it. So you just need to fix here and let's explore, but and going to another star system is so much harder than people think. It's so easy in sci-fi.
It is, but at the same time,
so far.
Exactly. But you can't go to England. You can't walk to England from here.
Right.
So
yes, you are not Jesus. You can't walk to
England. Correct. Right. So you need to take the steps, and those steps took centuries to cross the Atlantic.
That's true. But once crossing the Atlantic is nothing like crossing emptiness of space.
But Lee, it still starts with a single step.
It's true. You gotta start
somewhere. It'll be a thousand years before we're outside the solar system. But that's 1,000 years.
I think it'll be more.
We've got several
hundred million years before we can't live here.
Right.
And we can probably do more to extend the lifespan of living on Earth. Than to get to another. It would be easier to move asteroids and use gravity to move Earth farther out and give it more time than it would be to go to another star with a significant number of people to make a difference. You just can't build an arc to go to another star. It's too far. It's really, really far. And like that's another one of my favorite big concepts is scale.
Right.
Like, I think a lot of people don't understand the scale of things. Whether it's how big a picture you should put on your wall. Don't put that tiny picture on that big, big old wall over there. It doesn't look right. Get some bigger. Put more things on. Right. But like, that's one way scale comes in. But scale, like, how big is an atom? How big is a virus? How big is a bacteria? How big is this little bug? How big are we? How big is the Earth? How big is the solar system? How big is the stars near us that we can see? How big is the galaxy? I don't think you can't fit it in your head. People think they can. Oh, it's real big. No, you can't. You literally can't.
Right.
Get it. You don't have the brain space to picture the difference in scale. So it's huge. And I love that. I love trying. And I don't think I can.
I'll try right now. It's just, you literally, you just can't. You can't. And that's in this movie is like that. You can't. I think that's what it's trying to say with the giant gaps of in time. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
When you could, like you said earlier, he goes outside of the spaceship to fix something, and you're like, you really could have just, you can just, they actually do it in the movie. They actually show you the two examples in the movie where he goes outside to fix something, and isn't it later, after that, the long drawn out clip of everything going on, later in the movie he does it, and they don't even show you that. It just happens, right?
Right? So right.
It's like the point of that clip is exactly what you're saying, is that this is what it takes to do this. And it's on a grand scale. It takes a long time. It's very tedious. Yeah. The evolution of man is a tedious process. It's not going to happen over the 40 years that you and I are talking about, over our lifetime. It's not going to happen, but it's that each incremental step is going to get you there. And if you're going to sit down and watch it, for us as humans, we're thinking 40 years. We're thinking even say it took 2 minutes of that scene in a movie of watching him go from point A in space just to get to be able to the edge of the ship and be able to fix that little thing. Right. And we're sitting there going, oh my God, come on. What's taken so long? This has taken so long. That's the point of that scene.
That's the
point of everything, right?
It's to make you uncomfortable, to give you the feel, to make you feel it. You got to grok it. You ever heard the term grok as a verb?
No.
G-R-O-K. Physicists like to use it. It's a verb they use meaning to not just read about something, but to get it internally, get it in your gut to really feel it. So like it is impossible to grok a black hole.
Right.
You can't. You can grok a parabola and certain things like clays. You can throw a football and it'll go whoop, you know.
So
you instinctively in your gut know what a parabola is, how gravity can work. So you can grok gravity.
But you
can't grok gravity at a black hole, because now you've just twisted time and space.
You have no reference. Your brain doesn't have a reference.
Yeah. You developed on Earth where forces worked in this level.
Right.
And you can't do it at a higher level. So grok is a wonderful way to talk about, to really, in your gut, get something and feel something that is a concept that mostly you can only just read about and kind of know what it's getting at.
Right.
So this movie tries to make you grok some physics.
That you can't. That you like I was saying earlier, like when you said like, oh, the universe has been around. We know the universe has been around for X amount of time. Is it possible that we can't grok what time it? We have there could be stuff on even before that we just can't comprehend. So what's time? Time, I've said this for years, time's a man-made thing. It's our trip around the sun.
It's one of those dimensions that we,
it's
the direction we're heading in a fourth dimension. We're heading that direction because everything blew up in that direction. It's really kind of complicated. You know, one time I actually,
for
a split second, I kind of grokked one day how the faster you go, the more time changes for you.
Yeah, my son and I go over that one all the time.
Time slows down for you. I kind of understood it one day because I saw a graph of you put all of space, all three dimensions in just one direction, and you put time in another. And if you move more in the space direction, you don't go as far in the time direction. Like I kind of got it one day, and then I kind of lost it. You know, like, oh, holy cow, I get it. Oh, wait, what? Like for a second, it was just a feeling of like, ha, ha, ha. So big concepts, man. I love trying to get it.
I've had those ideas while driving in a car. And then all of a sudden, when you come back to reality, you're like, where am I? It's like, so you're literally, your body was on self-drive. Like you have no, it's just common drive, like your commute to work or whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, all right, where am I in my drive? I don't know.
The problem my problem is I do that kind of stuff in the middle of a regular day. And my wife is like, did you hear what I just said? I'm like, what? I'm sorry. I was on Jupiter.
Yeah.
What?
Well,
literally I was thinking about what if AI does this one day and she's trying to get my attention. Oh, what? Huh?
That's what I do all day long. I'm all by myself all day long. I work for myself. It literally in parking lots, painting cars, and I'm by myself. So I listen to podcasts. I listen to, and I'm trying to get ideas, because if I don't have that in my ear, then it's just my own mind. And that's even worse, because now
you don't
I'll
want
start
just
being like, you know what? This could be this. So I like to, even though I'm, you know, I can't interact with the person in my ear, but my mind is interacting with the thoughts and the ideas and the things that are, you know, all of that stuff.
It's focused.
Because I have, and my wife says it all, and it's come up fairly recently with all that's going on in the world, that it's difficult for me to, like, I have nobody to vent to. I'll come home and I'll talk to my wife and she's like, She's like, I understand why you're mad about this or you're this and that. And it's like, you're like, I have no outlet. I have nobody to, and what? I'm not looking for somebody to agree with me.
Hey,
it's great. No, the best
you're
way
doing
to vent
the outletting
is
right now.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And that's, yeah. that's how the, you know, I got yeah. into podcasting before the events of the world took place, but it is a way, right. but I am alone all day long. And this stuff, it's yeah. great. This is what I like to do. And it's stuff I like to talk about. And like, even just today, hey, we're doing 2001 Space Odyssey. Well, we probably did about 20 minutes of that, but it's all tangents
this is
off
a little
of
bit,
that.
Yeah.
And that's what the movie's consciousness. About.
Yeah. That's what the movie does for you. Honestly, that's right. why I love it, because it sparks all these other thoughts, just as the monolith sparked a new thought process in
Should I
primates
rename
4
this episode
ago.
The monolith and not 2000?
Yes, the monolith episode. The
monolith
the spark
episode.
Of intelligence episode. No.
Well, I don't know about
tell you
that.
What, let me tell you, your wife and my wife would probably have a lot to talk about.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah. As long as
just
my wife
a lot
doesn't
of nodding
bring her
and
notes.
Going, yes, I know.
Yeah, uh-huh. Something tells me there'd be a lot of crying and hugging going on.
Something like yeah, that.
I
that's
feel your pain.
Right
yep, okay.
I think we probably for today, that's about all I can. I mean, and I could talk forever, but
I know. I know.
I hope we contain.
You
some
gave me a time limit. We've gone over it.
Just
like because you could. I mean, we could. Yeah. And it's like that's what it's like. But that hey, 2001 A Space Odyssey. I think we will.
Well, look what it does to us.
I know.
It isn't a normal movie. Look what it does to us. Look what we end up talking about.
Well, we'll probably revisit it on a tangent in a future podcast. Yeah. What is another movie you would like to talk about that we can plan for the future? Another movie that
okay. You want to go completely different?
I want to go wherever you want to go because
right,
this is
here's
for
another
you.
Favorite. 1999 okay. Office Space.
All right. I haven't even seen that one.
Oh my God. What?
No.
Dude, would you like to understand me? Watch Office Space.
Exactly. Exactly. No, and that's what's fun. I did Warrior Princess with Rob. I'll do
I'll talk
anything with anybody okay. because it if even if it's something like the Home Theater Podcast, every episode I'd done up until that episode with Rob has been action and booms and bangs and all that fun right. stuff, sci-fi. And he's like, let's do that. What's the title of it? Complete title? Not Xena. It's Warrior. I love the series. But when he asked me to do it, I'm like, this is kind of like a kid's, a girl's show, no less, you know? And I'm like, oh,
sure.
But you know what I said, to you, I'm like, I didn't hesitate. I was like, absolutely, Rob, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was a great experience. Rob and I had a blast with it. Yeah, and we had, just like this podcast here, it's like we had a great back and forth. There's a lot in that to draw from.
He's trying to get me to watch more episodes. I think I watched two or three.
It's fantastic.
You got to get a little deeper into it. And I can see. I should go watch that. But one of my favorite movies,
Xena?
This is a comedy,
no,
by the way. Yeah. But a comedy is Office Space. Office Space is kind of a weird, dark, absurd comedy. And boy, if it doesn't hit everything I hate about business and the way the world works and the way people act and just, oh my God, it tweaks everything. And so please watch that. You got
we'll
it,
have
man.
Fun.
There's so much to talk about there. Yeah. Oh God, that one's so good. I can't believe you haven't seen that. Oh, you're gonna love it.
I don't think.
And if you don't,
explodes,
that's a lot to talk
right?
about too. Like if you don't like it, that there's a lot
right.
to talk about
oh,
there
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Either direction.
Yeah. I think we would. Maybe if I think I would like it. It's a comedy, but
it is a comedy. And
I do
and
like
it
comedies.
Pokes at everything I hate about the normal society we live in.
Right. But
boy,
see, one of the reasons I haven't seen it is I don't work in an office. I'm as far from an office. I know that, but it's like for me to actually just sit down on my own and watch it, I'd be like, all right, I'll watch something else. Because
in fact, if you know that you wouldn't enjoy working in an office, then this movie is perfect for you. Like, because it'll reinforce everything you already know is terrible right. about office work.
Oh yeah.
And I've only experienced office work a couple of times in my life and hated every moment of it.
Yeah. You're a hamster on a wheel.
Kinda. Yeah. So. But it's more complex than that. Oh my God.
Oh yeah,
so much
of course.
About. So
all
that's
right.
the next one for sure.
There we go.
All right. Office Space.
We'll try to do it a little bit sooner than a year from now.
Yes.
But we got Thanksgiving coming up. We'll be talking again then, I'm sure.
Hopefully we're doing another
together.
Big Thanksgiving show.
Yeah.
All the podcasts.
We're working on it, and we got to the hardest part is scheduling, and we'll talk, obviously the six of us will talk more about it then, but that's the difficult part. Six people to be able to sit down and talk, because you know once you do, it isn't a 5-minute conversation.
No, it's not. We better plan that one out a little more.
I have everybody here. I think that's fun. I mean, I like this being the destination to bring all of these people in and have conversation, people getting to know everybody in a different perspective. So that's fun too. But yeah, I'm really got my fingers crossed, and we're working on it. Everybody's making the best effort, but we'll see what we get.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. But yeah, this is fun. I love it. Thank you for having me on again. Hey. And I'll do it anytime I can. And I'm really looking forward. If you will watch Office Space, man, I'll really enjoy that one.
Absolutely. And Lee, cool. I say this to everybody that comes on. If you and Ara actually has taken me up on it. Mm-hmm. If you have an idea and you want to come on, let me know.
Okay.
Because you don't have to wait for me. Just be like, hey, Deej, I just thought of a great idea. Ara's done it. And Ara texted me about the Tomorrow War. He texted me, he goes, have you seen that? And I was like, yeah. And what I did is I actually we had a quick 15-minute conversation, and I actually inserted it like he called into the podcast. I put I put the phone call in, like the ringing, bring, Ara's calling. But I have fun with that stuff. But if you have ideas,
that's perfect.
That's what this is about. Okay. It's just fun stuff. So let's have some fun.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Another outlet for some wild ideas.
There you go. All right.
I love it.
Thanks, Lee. Nice talking to you. And we will talk again very soon. Yeah. All right. That was my conversation with Lee. Had a blast. Absolute blast. You never know where those things are going to go. We had an idea in mind, and it was 2001 A Space Odyssey, and we went all over the place, even a little bit of football. Who knew? But that's what I like. And Lee and I actually talked after the fact and not recorded. And we were like, that's what I like. I want people to come in. I want to talk about things that, you know, we don't have to stick to a regimented, like, this is what it's about. Let's just see where it goes. And that's what I want my guests to do. That's how I want them to feel when they get here. So I hope you guys appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Thank you to my 14 patrons. Thank you to all my Twitter followers. I'll be talking more to you guys on Tuesday. You'll be Takeover Tuesday. I've got a bunch of comments. Whole bunch of comments come in about sound versus picture still. We got that going on. Had a few other events coming up. So back on Tuesday. So looking forward to sitting down with you guys then. But until then, have a great weekend, everybody. I will be back on Tuesday. And you know what? You gotta do. Go push play.
Hey Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.